Stephen Hawking is the most famous physicist alive today. So famous, he's inspired books and films and even songs. The music we're listening to, in fact, is from a jazz CD called Goodnight, Stephen Hawking. Still, it's a little startling that his new book, The Grand Design, has generated protests and headlines around the world. Religious leaders in the UK and the US are bothered by Hawking's claim that he's figured out where the universe came from. And the answer is, not from God. Steve Paulson sat down with Hawking's co-author, Caltech physicist Leonard Mlodinow, to talk about the book and its public reception.
Why do you think this book has struck such a nerve?
Well, it's the comments that we make about God and that it's coming from Stephen Hawking. But it's not really the comments we make about God. You see, the book is about two things at its basic level. One is, where did the universe come from or how was it created? And the other is, why are the laws of nature what they are? And the second question, we should understand that when I say how are they what they are, that they seem to be extremely finely tuned in a manner that allows our existence. That is, if you change them by even a small amount, in many cases, the universe will not look the way it does today, and it will have evolved differently in a way that doesn't allow for intelligent life. And these questions, in one form or another, have been asked throughout the ages. People have always wondered, how did the universe get here? And people have always wondered, you know, why is our world so hospitable? They might not have known quite how finely tuned the laws are that, for instance, you can't change the proton mass more than 2 parts in 1,000 without destroying everything. But they wondered, you know, they looked at a horse and they said, gee, it's so comfortable to sit on. God must have put it there for that reason. People didn't have the answers to the question, so they turned to God. Modern science can answer those questions, and God, therefore, is not necessary to create the universe or to explain the laws or why they're so finely tuned.
Well, your book certainly has generated quite a lot of pushback from religious leaders. For instance, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, has said, and I'm quoting here, "Physics on its own will not settle the question of why there is something rather than nothing." Is he wrong?
Well, physics offers an answer, a scientific answer to why there is something rather than nothing. If that doesn't satisfy you, if in your own mind you're looking for a different kind of answer, then we don't say that you can't find a different answer. We don't say God didn't create the universe or that it's wrong to believe that. We're saying science offers an answer, and it's the answer, a scientific type of answer. Science is based on observation and testing. Science is why we have the radio and all the other conveniences of modern life. It actually leads to something, and it's verifiable. It has tangible results. But then there's also the spiritual world, the world of thought, and if people wish to believe that there's something else beyond that, then we have nothing to say about that. We certainly wouldn't oppose that in the way that they oppose our saying that science also has an answer.
Mm-hmm. Let me follow up on the statement that you and Hawking make at the very beginning of your book, that the universe can and will create itself from nothing. This is the thing that, you know, for generations people thought, you know, you needed God for. You're saying that you can explain the spontaneous creation scientifically. How do you do that?
There are several elements in that explanation, but the one concept that's really very relevant to that, immediately relevant, is the concept of nothingness. So in quantum theory, nothingness is not exist in the way you think of it, as that there's nothing there. From nothingness, things are constantly fluctuating in and out of existence. When you apply these ideas to the whole universe, you find that multiple universes appear from nothing, each with their own physical laws, their own different laws of nature, and that they appear spontaneously. And that's, I think, what is exciting people who would like to think that God created the universe instead. But anyway, that's a thumbnail explanation.
Well, I have to ask about Stephen Hawking's 1988 book, A Brief History of Time, which, of course, was an enormous bestseller. And he ends that book with a statement, "If we discover a complete theory, it would be the ultimate triumph of human reason, for then we should know the mind of God." Is it fair to say that Hawking is no longer interested in the mind of God?
Well, I think that physicists often speak of God in a metaphorical way. And, you know, at most what they mean when they talk that way quite often is some other, not necessarily the specific God of the Bible or the Quran or any particular God, but God as the embodiment of physical law, the way Einstein talked about God. Now, I'm not saying that Stephen was talking that way, but since you bring that up, I think that, you know, he's saying that if this was true, we would know the grand design is what he's saying. And he's saying, you know, what is the grand design? And in the last 20-some years since that book was written, actually, it started in the early 80s, so it's been 25 years, his thinking has evolved. And in the new book, we explain why the laws of nature are what they are, and we talk about the many histories, multiple histories of the universe existing simultaneously. And I think we go to a more definitive statement that there's that God isn't necessary for these answers.
Mm-hmm. Let me follow up on this idea of multiple universes, or what's sometimes called the multiverse. Other people have talked about parallel universes. I know there are sort of different ways that these theories can play out. Are you saying there are many different versions, perhaps infinite numbers of versions of me roaming around in different universes, each split off in different quantum realities?
Not quite. There are infinitely many different universes. The universe exists in many different guises or many different superposition of different histories. That's what you get from applying quantum theory to the universe. But of course, you have been observed, you have been measured. So a universe where you have four arms is not a possibility. That can be eliminated from the fact that we know that you have two arms. So the measurements and the observations that occur, the interactions that occur in the present, prune out of all these histories which ones are possible, and they define that final point.
So you're not saying, for instance, that if I made a different choice, I don't know, 20-some years ago and, you know, didn't marry my wife and have the two children that I have now, that I'd be living in a different reality and I might have, I don't know, four children with a different wife. I mean, you're not sort of laying out that as a conceivable scenario that, you know, this other me might exist in a different universe. That's not what you're talking about.
No, that is... That's a separate issue from the multiverse issue. And the multiverse issue says that when the universe was formed, many universes were formed, and, you know, all with different laws. Some of them were very different than ours, and some of them were very similar to ours. So, you know, one could speculate, if one wanted to take this into slightly into the speculative or science fiction realm, that this means that other universes exist where what you said is true and you're made different life choices. And
there are people, physicists who've made that argument. I mean, that's sort of the parallel universe.
Well, no, I think you're talking about the many worlds interpretation of quantum theory, which is a slightly different topic. We can go into that if you want.
No, that's okay.
Okay.
Well, you know, I want to step back for a moment and ask about your collaboration with Stephen Hawking, who is such a distinctive figure in the world, arguably the most famous scientist since Einstein. And of course, he suffers from neuromuscular dystrophy, which has left him almost completely paralyzed. How did you write this book with him?
Well, we had basically two means. One is together and the other is apart. He comes out to Caltech about 4 to 6 weeks every year, and we would, in that period, we would work intensely together.
Do you mainly talk with each other? Do you communicate in other ways?
Yeah, we talk to each other. I mean, of course, he communicates differently, but we would, you know, read over the page and talk, and sometimes engage in chit chat or jokes, or, you know, over dinner, you know, watch TV or whatever, and then talk. You know, yeah, just like any two people would. And in between, we would each have our own little assignments, and we would email them back and forth, and pretty much each rewriting each other, and, you know, debating the ideas, the way we say things, even in some cases, single words. I mean, that's why it took 4 years.
Mm. Well, the reason I ask is, I have this image of Stephen Hawking as a man whose physical ability to communicate is very slow, but whose mind is racing at warp speed. Is that a fair description?
Yes, it is. The one advantage from my point of view, he says it's his disability is an advantage because it allows him to focus. And I'm telling you that from my point of view, the advantage is it allows me to keep up with him.
Did you argue over passages in the book?
Sometimes we did. The most interesting one was a passage that we're arguing over. He's telling me I'm wrong, and I'm sure that I'm right. And after about an hour, he's answering me, and I'm getting frustrated. I'm looking at my laptop to see, well, you know, what's the origin of this? How could I have misunderstood? And I find that he's the one who originally wrote the passage. So I said, Stephen, I hold up my computer to him to see. I said, you wrote this. He says, it's still wrong. And I look at him, and then the next thing he says is, I changed my mind. This is at the beginning, this was his top-down cosmology, which we didn't talk about in this interview, but it's a major element of the book, and he was still developing it, so that's what that was all about. But it was an interesting discussion. So he pulled the trump card and said that that he was wrong. So now look at it this way, you know. Thank you.
Leonard Mlodinow is a physicist at Caltech and author of The Drunkard's Walk. He and Steve were talking about The Grand Design, co-authored by Mlodinow and Stephen Hawking.